Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 144. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director with TechTarget, and I am here with Alex Khalafi, Security News Writer. Alex, welcome.
Thank you. It's my first time. I'm so happy to be here, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, you say that now, but we'll see how you're feeling at the end of the episode. Yes, it is your inaugural Risk and Repeat podcast. I hope you enjoy it and you don't get scared away. But since we're talking about a story that you wrote and work that you've done in your early career at TechTarget, I'm hoping that this goes smoothly and you enjoy it. But yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
And so let's get into it. So you did an article, Alex. You are new to the security beat, but already doing quite well. I guess
thanks.
I shouldn't say that because then you're going to say, you said I was doing quite well and I have a recording of it. And now I want a raise. And a title change.
I want your title,
yeah,
Rob.
I want your title. I want to be security news director, maybe someday. But no, so you wrote an article.
Yes.
I'm not fond of lists. I should just say that right off the bat. I like reading lists. I don't like writing lists. But you did an excellent list of
thanks.
The biggest or most notable data breach disclosures of the second half of 2019. I wrote the list for the first half of 2019. You wrote the second half list. So 10 of the most notable or biggest data breach disclosures. And I say data breach disclosures because some of these breaches, as you noticed, Alex, working on this, did not happen in the second half of 2019.
No.
They happened earlier in 2019. So we do these lists based on when the disclosure first occurs, when the company says, yes, we've been breached, and oh, by the way, it happened in 2017 or started in 2017 or 2018 or early 2019, but we are disclosing it now because we just discovered it, yada, yada, yada. So that's how we do our list. You compiled some really interesting incidents, breaches in this list.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to examine some of the trends and shifts around these events. And some of those trends sort of include things we've talked about before, or you and I haven't talked about before, but we've talked about, you know, not on a podcast, extremely long sort of intrusions, or what they call dwell time. So the adversary has access to a network for, you know, months, maybe even longer, maybe years in some cases. I don't think any of the breaches on this list had dwell times that long, or confirmed dwell times. There's also inadequate encryption protocols, stuff that's been deprecated or put out to pasture that's still being used to protect confidential or sensitive customer data. And then there's the questionable data breach disclosures that lack any sort of
admission
real
of guilt.
Yeah. I think we regret what happened. Yeah, we regret what happened. But here are the details. You know, any sort of real detail about the number of individuals affected or the types of data that are affected. I've noticed sort of a distressing trend that we seem to be moving in a direction. I haven't done an empirical study on this, but we seem to be moving in a direction where it feels like we're getting a little bit less information when these disclosures happen, which is upsetting. But with that said, Alex, before we get into the list, like anything from your perspective as a new reporter on the security beat,
mm-hmm.
anything that stood out to you as you were working on this list, you know, in terms of a specific incident or a specific trend or anything that just sort of surprised you or that stood out?
Yes. In fact, I want to jump to number 8, which is my favorite one.
We'll go out of order. It's fine.
We'll go out of order. So my favorite moment is T-Mobile. They confirmed a breach that affected more than 1 million of its customers. And they said in their sort of disclosure.
Yes.
Rate plan and features of voice calling are customer proprietary network information under FCC rules, which require we provide you notice of this incident, implying that they might not have actually disclosed this incident if they didn't have to.
Yes, yes. It's, yeah. I mean, do I think T-Mobile would have disclosed this regardless of whether the rate plan and features, the CPNI stuff under FCC rules was in there? Yeah, I think they would have. But the way they worded that is like, it makes it sound like exactly what you said. No, we wouldn't have. Like, we're only saying this now because your rate plan and features of your service were included. And that's why we're here and doing this now. Yeah. And T-Mobile's not a small – I mean, some of the companies on this list are small or less well-known. T-Mobile, big company.
Yeah.
Not a great look, right?
Right. It's
It could have been better. It could have been better.
But I think it it ties to the overall covering your behind that happens in a lot of these disclosures.
Yes.
Where they're like, we regret the inconvenience this has caused you without actually directly admitting guilt, which the more I think about it, the more I think that maybe it's so that in case there's a class action lawsuit, they're not completely...
They don't want to own up too much because then, yeah, the lawyers will try to use it as leverage against them. I see. I mean, you wrote that story, too, about data breach lawsuits. This is one of your first stories here, which was excellent, by the way.
All these compliments.
I know. I got to erase the tapes. But you did that story. You talked to some lawyers who work on these cases, worked on some of the really big cases. And this is – I mean, these things happen almost instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, I get why some of the breach disclosures do not have more forthcoming language in them or more details. At the same time, to your point, it's kind of striking in some cases.
It stinks because there's this part of you that, like, if you go on How Have I Been Pwned,
yes,
and then you type in your email address – and you notice that, like, T-Mobile or you were your user of Toondoo.
Yeah.
So you put your email in there. You want to see a disclosure that says, I screwed up.
Yes.
That'd but they nice. Don't say that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
don't say that.
You want to know exactly, too, what's who's been affected, what's been affected, what data is out there, what you need to start sort of keeping an eye on, whether it's payment card accounts or whether it's, you know, health data or whatever, which we'll get into here in a minute. But, like, you want that. And you don't always get it. And it's unfortunate. But regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number eight.
What was your favorite, Rob?
So my favorite. favorite.
Top five breaches. Yeah, number four.
Yeah, Capital One's going to love this. So the Capital One breach is the one that really stands out for me. And we'll start running through the other eight here in a minute. But that's the one that really stood out for me because, and I'm you know, we're working on an article here at TechTarget about, you know, just looking at the aftermath of this breach and the repercussions. It feels like it had a big influence. Like the breach itself was not huge. The data did not it doesn't look like the data ended up on the dark web. The alleged perpetrator in this case is, was arrested, and they found out who it was, and it's an ex AWS engineer. But the thing that was really interesting to me was how this breach happened. It was somebody who used to work at AWS that knew about some ways to get into some of these S3 buckets or AWS instances and obtain customer data. And not only that, but they knew how to take advantage of things like the AWS metadata service and a misconfiguration and the Capital One firewall to be able to get in and get stuff that was like, I mean, it's, you're talking about credit scores, balances, payment history, contact information, not an insignificant amount of data. And then in some cases there were social security numbers.
Linked bank account numbers.
Yeah, and that's on top of just the general stuff like name, address, zip code, phone numbers, email address, dates of birth, self-reported income. Oh, man. It's a lot. It's a lot. And to think that, like, you know, that there were things about, you know, the misconfigurations happen all the time in mm-hmm. the cloud. But then there's also, you know, questions about the metadata service that AWS runs for its instances. And, you know, they made a correction to that. They made, an update to sort of address some of the concerns about, you know, credentials and information being exposed in this service and the ability for hackers to reach into the service and get that data. I think it's fascinating. It's we wrote a lot about it. We're still writing a lot about it. Again, not in terms of, you know, number of people involved and damage done. It's not one of the bigger ones, but it's just the influence of it and the profile of it has just been huge. So that one really stands out. Let's go to the what's the next one here on the list? No, it's number two, because that Capital One was – we went in alphabetical order. So
right.
So, yeah, that was number one.
Number two is Cafe Press.
Oh, yes.
The famous sort of merchandise clothing company where you can get your stuff printed on the shirts. Late February it was hacked, which is – it was not disclosed until early August.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So a little bit of a whether you want to call it dwell time or occupation, intrusion, whatever, however you want to term it, it looks like there were several months there that this was going on, or at least the intruder had initial access.
Deprecated passwords.
Yeah, so this is the thing that stands out for this one. Passwords, encrypted, great. Okay, but you're encrypting them with SHA-1. And that's been outdated and deprecated. That was deprecated by the NIST in 2011. Like, that's nearly, I mean, we're almost.
It's nearly a decade
ago. Yeah, yeah.
You were only 50.
Yeah, that hurts. But no, but for real, like, I mean, man, like, that's a long time ago. And to think that they're still using that, I mean, this is something that, like, other companies have gotten in trouble or criticized over. You know, Yahoo was using some outdated protocols or stuff that had been deprecated in its breaches of passwords a while back. You know, the previously reported breaches from 2016, 2015. I mean, it's something that happens, but it's always disappointing to see that. So, you know, just urge companies out there to look at what encryption protocols you're using and try to find something that's a little bit more up to date.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next one?
DoorDash featuring breached dashers.
Mm.
Yeah. They were breached on May 4th, 2019. 4.9 million users, including consumers, delivery people, which is dashers with a capital D, and merchants. It was different information stolen depending on which you were.
Yeah.
Users was names, email addresses, hashed and salted passwords, delivery addresses, phone numbers, and order history. The last four digits of certain users' payment cards, the last four digits of bank account numbers for dashers and merchants, and the driver's license numbers of approximately 100,000 dashers.
Not great.
Not great.
Not great. I mean, they were, it seemed like reading that disclosure, though, it didn't feel like they were trying to sidestep this, you know? There was more information in that disclosure, I think, than some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed like they were pretty clear on what was affected per, you know, the type of person that was affected, whether it was a driver or, you know, whatever they call them, dashers or a customer.
Yeah.
But still, you know, they didn't disclose this till the end of December. So you're talking May, June, July, August, and then almost the entirety of September. It's, you know, that's tough. That's tough. But again, one of the more forthcoming, more detailed disclosures, I think, of the bunch here. So,
yeah, but it still features that we deeply regret the frustration and inconvenience that this may cause you, which I know they have to put it, but I still hate it.
Yeah. Yeah, we gotta work on the language. We're available, by the way, to any enterprise out there to sort of consult.
Data breach copy consultants.
Yeah. We can help you with this. I think we can massage some of the statements to make them feel a little bit more human, a little bit more relatable, a little bit more impactful. I don't know.
Yeah, you've seen our work on the user interface for Microsoft 10, Windows 10.
All right, so number four, Life Labs.
This one was a bit of a brutal one, huh?
Yeah, this is not great. Toronto-based lab services company breached in a cyber attack that I guess resulted in the theft of up to 15 million Canadian customers at some point. I think they announced this in late October. Names, addresses, email addresses, logins, passwords, dates of birth, health card numbers, gender, phone numbers, passwords, security questions.
That one always hurts because that one you can't really change that much.
Yeah. I mean, now there's all this wisdom. People have talked about this for a long time saying, you know, you should just get rid of security questions. But if you're forced to use them for an account, make something up, like totally fictitious. Because that way, if an attacker does start to scout you for whatever reason, and I'm not saying a threat actor or a nation state threat actor is going to be looking at me or you for, you know, to get into our lives and our email accounts or anything like that. But hey, it's not a bad idea to sort of make something up. So, in the off chance that someone does target you, they can probably find out whatever they need to find out from a security question by reading through your Facebook page. You're too young. You're not on Facebook, I'm guessing.
I am on Facebook.
Wow.
But in 2011, I was like 15 years old.
Yeah, so this is right. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these security questions you can pick up just through, you know, wide open public information that's posted on social media. And then the big thing, lab test results.
Yeah.
Lab test results.
So what kind of damage can you do with that?
Well, I mean, let's say it was something particularly sensitive.
Then you could blackmail someone with them. Yeah.
Let's say a nation state gets a hold of this, China, and they're looking to influence some people to maybe give them information to turn them, you know, like this is some type of spy thriller here.
Okay.
But no, seriously, and not only that, but think of it this way. I mean, we've written about some ransomware attacks that have involved, shaming the victims with the exposed data.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my lab test results out there, you know? Yeah. I don't even know, like, what my lab test results would show. I never look at them when I get them back. I'm just kidding. I do. I just don't want any private information out there, especially, like, medical information.
Right. It's because, like, best case scenario, they know you went for that test.
Yeah. Like, why'd you go for this? Well, let's not get into it.
No, let's get specific, Rob.
let's stay away from there.
Yeah,
so like a lot of healthcare breaches, this one, not good. A lot of sensitive material in there. Okay, next one.
Lumen PDF, which I was actually a user of. That one popped up on my Have I Been Pwned.
Yeah.
There was 15 million accounts. Names, genders, email addresses, spoken languages, which is always a fascinating one, bcrypt hash passwords, and more. So let me ask you, is bcrypt one of the good ones or one of the bad ones?
Middle.
Okay.
I would say.
Okay.
It's not SHA-1, but you could do better, I think. I mean, that's sort of the consensus, at least from what I've read about, some of the encryption protocols out there that were popular maybe 5-10 years ago, but so not the worst, but what really stood out for me on this one was so they confirmed the breach, like when I guess reporters, media outlets called them on it. But they didn't. They never posted anything on their website, and I guess they just emailed people to let them know that this happened.
Yeah.
Like that's.
The email may have already been compromised.
I don't want to. I don't want to be too harsh, but that really sucks. Like that is bad form. Like if you get breached, you put something on your website that people can look at, that lets customers and prospective customers know what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
By just emailing, you know, your existing customers, you're I mean, that's CYA, that's damage control, that's trying to limit people's exposure to the event so that, you know, you don't scare people off. And but I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it. So.
And we were talking about Capital One, how that probably didn't end up on the dark web.
Yeah.
I
mean, someone definitely got that data, but it didn't.
It didn't necessarily get as public as one of the later breaches we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But this was actually on the dark web.
It's not great.
No, no.
And why do they need? Why do you need gender? Why do you need a user's gender for Lumen PDF? Whatever. All right, moving on before I get really angry. What's the next one?
Poshmark.
Yes.
Yeah, that one was they announced on August 1st. It's the fashion marketplace.
Yes.
User information, including usernames, first and last names, genders, city, email addresses, bcrypt once again, hash passwords, user ID, size preferences, and other preferences for email and push notifications of over 36 million users.
That's a lot, man. That is a lot.
I don't know what you could do with shoe size preferences, though.
I don't know. Maybe email and push notifications are more useful because if you found that out and you could start drawing up some, you know, some solid phishing emails, you could really exploit that. You could really get some Poshmark users to fall for stuff, you know, because there's no payment data in there. But maybe if you send them something to say, hey, confirm your.
Yeah, no, it's a good idea. We shouldn't be giving people too many ideas.
Yeah. Strike that. Now, I remember we were working on this one. I was editing this. So this was stunning to me. So 36 million users.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this data that was spilled. Again, no plain text passwords, bcrypt hashed passwords. But so they initially recommended when they disclosed this, they recommended that users change their passwords.
Mm-hmm.
But then they later came back and issued a full forced password reset.
I believe that was over a month later too.
Yeah, a month later. So you like here. Just if you think that there may be any compromise of passwords, even if it's just a really small number out of that 36 million, you gotta issue the forced password reset. And just doing that later, a month later, that looks terrible to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's weird that they even like got in the first place the idea of a recommendation. Yeah.
What are
silly,
you gonna do?
Silly.
Yeah. All right, next one.
Number 7, StockX, the fashion trading platform.
Another fashion company. Jeez.
I believe they're focused on shoes.
Yeah, great.
They experienced a data breach, 7 million unique email addresses, as well as physical addresses, purchases, names, hash passwords, and so much more. And on August 1st, hey, they did something right. They initiated a forced password reset email for what they called system updates. Oh, never mind. Spoke too soon.
Yep.
It was revealed by TechCrunch the next day that the password reset was actually for a data breach.
Yeah. And honestly, by the way, TechCrunch, great story there. Zach Whitaker got the scoop on that. You can read that initial statement, and it doesn't make sense. And he jumped on that and really, you know, started pointing out that this doesn't add up. You just got to come out and say it. Don't try to dress it up. Don't try to sort of minimize it. Just own up.
Because you get in trouble later when you inevitably get caught because you always get caught.
Yeah, it's all the information's going to come out somewhere or another. And I don't know. That was a dodge, and they shouldn't have done that. And then the other thing was, so they did issue a password reset, but they said they upgraded the encryption in the notification to to customers, and I think they sent that in an email as well. Okay, but here's my question. Upgraded the encryption from what and to what? And it didn't say. So if you're upgrading the encryption, that tells me that the encryption that's on those passwords is not good.
Right.
So maybe SHA-1.
If it's there.
Yeah. So that's just bad. You need more information there.
Mm-hmm. Number 8 was T-Mobile.
That's right. Your favorite.
My favorite. And then number 9.
This one was great.
ToonDo. This one was like a last-minute addition for us.
Yeah, this one was bonkers.
Yeah, so they became aware of a breach on November 11th, and then it's like, okay, usernames, passwords, email addresses, gender, IP addresses, not good, but it's a typical breach.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this is that as soon as they discovered, the parent company discovered the user information had been compromised, JAMBAV, the parent company of ToonDo, which is a comic strip creation website, they shut down the website permanently, immediately.
Yeah, so weird. So weird. This, and the all-time sort of list of truly odd, unique data breach disclosures, changing the company website to say adios and announcing that you've shut the company down as a result of this incident, that's up there. You are going to be remembered, ToonDo. Just really odd. And then just we filed a complaint with the FBI, and are engaging law enforcement authority. I filed a complaint. All right, whatever.
Adios.
Yeah, it's just so strange, but
yeah.
There you have it. Definitely the strangest one of the bunch. And then and then the last one here.
Zynga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not great.
Famous maker of Words with Friends.
Yes.
220 million players of Words with Friends.
There's the winner.
According to the hacker who took responsibility, I want to figure out the pronunciation of
Gnostic Players.
Is it Gnostic Players?
Yeah,
is it Gnostic Players, or is it Gnostic Players?
I think it's Gnostic.
Gnostic. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. They accessed a database that included Android and iOS player data of those who installed the game before September 2nd. Names, email addresses, login IDs, passwords, phone numbers, Facebook IDs, and Zynga account IDs. They also claim to have accessed other Zynga-developed games, including Draw Something and OMG Pop. But the Gnostic Players also accessed a bunch of other stuff. Like,
yeah.
He's involved in, like, what, over 50 breaches?
Or he's taken credit. It's tough to sort of confirm all of the ones that have been attributed to him, either through media reports or just sort of dark web chatter. Or,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's he, she, them. That name is somewhat infamous with breaches. Yeah. So, yeah, and Zynga confirmed the breach. I mean, they did. I think they did a forced password reset for some users that were affected. But there's still some questions about, you know, all of the games that were affected, because, you know, obviously there were reports that more games beyond the ones that Zynga admitted to were affected, and I don't know. It's a little bit more detail there would have been nice, just so we know exactly, explicitly which segment of users were affected and how and what they need to do and that sort of thing. So
yeah,
but yeah, 220 million. I think that is the most on this list.
That is the most confirmed.
Yeah, and then quickly, since we've talked about some of the trends here regarding inadequate disclosures or inadequate encryption, protection, lack of details, lack of transparency, we should talk real quickly about Wawa.
Wawa.
Oh, man. So, yeah, you wrote a story this week just sort of...
But, Rob, how was the story?
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. You fish it for compliments now. No, it was. It was a good story that sort of looked at, Wawa convenience store chain is very popular on the East Coast, especially in New Jersey. They were breached. They announced they were breached in December, and they actually should have could have been on our second half data breach disclosure list. But so they were they announced that malware had gotten on their payment processing servers.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? Tell us what happened, Alex.
Yeah, so malware got on their payment processing servers, and then on January 27th, well, okay, we should talk about when the malware actually got on.
Yeah.
Because they found out about this December 10th, allegedly, and yes. contained it by December 12th. But some, including Mr. Krebs, Mr. Brian Krebs, talked about how the malware was potentially on their servers for 9 months.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy, crazy dwell time.
Yeah, I think they said they admitted to this publicly that it affected potentially all Wawa in-store payment terminals and fuel dispensers after March 4th of 2019. That's
wow.
That's long. That's not great.
Yeah,
and then the latest development.
January 27th, the evening of. Which was the Monday, this was of this being recorded, so the previous Monday.
Yes.
The dark web marketplace known as Joker's Stash began selling card data from some nationwide breach, which was later discovered to in fact be Wawa.
Yeah, big bada boom.
Three.
Yes, was the data collection, the data dump that this individual had put up on Joker Stash. And so Gemini Advisory, the cybersecurity firm in New York,
mm-hmm.
did a little digging, did a little analysis of the dump. And I guess there was only 100,000 accounts in there.
Yeah, the first one, just under.
But based on the information and sort of triangulating the affected accounts and where they were located, their zip codes, mm-hmm. and the common purchases or expenses among those were it sort of led them to conclude that this was Wawa.
Yes, it seems like they may have been lying. The big bot, not Gemini, they're legit, but the big bada boom dark web advertisers may have been lying, because they said stuff from over 40 U.S. states. But in reality, Gemini Advisory looked at it and they're like, actually, it's from 6 U.S. states, all have Wawa locations. We're still trying to figure out if it's only Wawa or if it's other breaches were involved part of this. And then we also don't know if it was 30 million like Big Bada Boom was advertising on Joker's Stash, or if it's less or if it's more. Do we want to make a prediction on that?
I don't know. So, well, I will, but why don't you sort of fill the listeners in on your attempt to get that question answered?
Yeah. So I reached out to Wawa and I asked them three questions. I asked them, let me see, where is it? Oh, we asked them if the 30 million payment card report was accurate. So was it 30 million like it was reported as could be.
Yep.
If any customers have reported fraudulent charges on their cards, which I knew they wouldn't answer, but you still got to ask.
Yeah, it's worth asking. Yeah. It's fine.
And then what steps they were taking to prevent future breaches, since they said they were enhancing their security in the press release. And they responded with sort of a form letter that said, thanks, and then was a link to their disclosure of the original breach, as well as a PDF copy of the press release that said, hey, the stuff may have been going on sale.
Yeah.
So.
Not a great look.
Not a great look.
Could have been better. Could have been a lot better. And I got to say, you asked about a prediction. My default position on this is that if you ask a company to confirm the report that all of its customers or, X million of customers were affected based on, dark web claims or whatever, that usually whatever the worst case scenario is, that's what occurred. Mm-hmm. And they're resisting saying it. I don't know why. I'm not sure what this is going to get Wawa in the long run. I guess it could be worse if they don't, if they truly do not know how many customers were affected at this point, months, you know, later after after this first occurred, and you know, nearly 2 months. We're recording this. I should have said this off the top. We're recording this on January 31st, a Friday. This will be online next week, first week of February. But you know, we're almost 2 months away from their initial discovery, and if they still don't know how many people are affected, that's
a bad look, Rob.
That's bad. But it's to me, it's almost worse if they do know and they don't want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I know, not really. They're just doing the PR thing, but they should say, they should confirm how many people are affected, because there may be people out there who don't, for whatever reason, think that they are not affected. They think that they're in the clear, think that they don't even remember going to a Wawa. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what gas station or convenience store I went to the last time I filled up or bought something, you know, at the counter or whatever. So, I don't know. Definitely lacking information and sort of full disclosure there, and it's disappointing. But I have a feeling we haven't heard the last of this. I have a feeling that there's going to be more information coming out about this one, and just sort of the nature of the incident, maybe the malware, maybe further disclosure about the number of affected individuals, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. It's the consequences portion is still to be determined.
Yeah. But Alex, I mean, you are learning that this is how it goes with data breaches and data breaches disclosures and what companies do when things like this happen. And, so there's you're getting a taste of it.
Yeah, it's when I started writing about cybersecurity, I knew there would be a lot of data breaches. I didn't know that there would be a new data breach like every single day.
Yeah.
And some of them, as with the case of Wawa, are pretty dang big.
Yep. Welcome to the party, as they say.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, Alex, thank you for taking time out to run through your list of some of the biggest breach disclosures, I should say, the second half of 2019, and chatting with me about those incidents and some of the trends and patterns. And look forward to our next podcast. This went pretty well, right?
Yeah, it was okay. It was fun.
Yeah, you're going to save that too and forward that to the higher-ups when you negotiate. Good luck, Alex.
Thanks, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.